they get a call from the vendor and said, hey, you know, we've always been on good standing with you, and this is kind of a hard phone call to make, but you owe us a couple million dollars. You know, they dig through and they go back and ultimately find the other request to change the routing. And then where did that come from? And so now everybody's looking, right? You know, what happened here? How did this happen?
What happens when you accidentally send millions of dollars to a cyber threat actor who you thought was a trusted vendor? You call Bruce Nelson. Bruce is the owner and president of Vertilocity, a cloud and IT managed service provider. In this episode, Bruce will share more about this story, as well as his thoughts on the importance of end-user education when it comes to cybercrime prevention. This is the Cybercrime Lab, a podcast about true cybercrime stories, the impact on victims, and what businesses can do to protect themselves and their customers. And if you think you're not at risk, that is exactly where attackers want you to be.
In my experience, it only takes hearing what these attacks are like a few times to realize you need to prepare yourself for what could be a business-ending experience.
That's Andy Anderson, the founder and CEO of DataStream Insurance. For over a decade, Andy has been working with victims of cybercrime. He's seen firsthand the human impact of a cyber attack. Now, he's on a mission to shed light on the threats we all face from a world we can't see.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much for joining us on the Cybercrime Lab podcast. Great to have you. Excited for you to kind of share some of your experiences. But for those who don't know your background, if you can just take, 30 seconds to introduce yourself, that'd be awesome.
Sure. Yeah. And thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's obviously an important topic. It affects everybody from organizations to individuals in their personal lives. So it's something I'm pretty passionate about. And I was certainly appreciative of the opportunity. So my firm in general, we are an MSP. So it's about 65 people. So we do anywhere from help desk services to cloud migrations and management solutions. We do security, obviously. So IT security, design work, as well as a lot of work on accounting and ERP systems. We're a Microsoft ERP partner, as well as a Sage partner, Acumatica, payroll solution. So we touch a lot of aspects of, number one, sensitive data, as well as the back office function. So whether you're dealing with payroll data and social security numbers, identifiable information, or in our MSP practice and security solutions, we're pretty heavily weighted, probably over 40% of our practices in the healthcare space with healthcare focus. So our clients are under attack. Organizations we work with on a regular basis are highly targeted. And then again, just sort of the personal level of just protecting information and educating people. So that's a big part of what we do as a prevention. So.
And, obviously work with a lot of businesses, but not necessarily like big businesses, right? A lot of sort of small to medium-sized businesses, right? Which is, we hear all the time, small businesses think that they're too small to be a target. And I think, 60% of attacks hit small businesses, right?
The vast majority of our client base is probably, 25 to 250 seats. So these really are small to mid-sized organizations, right? And, and above 250 seats, it's all different levels of how you identify enterprise and mid-enterprise and, whatever. But anything over 250, we do a lot of co-managed in that space. So as organizations get a little bit bigger, they may have line of business expertise or, help desk expertise, but they don't have cloud expertise. That's another area where, cybersecurity has to be really integrated and in front of mind, because if you're sharing responsibilities for managing, an environment, users and things like that, takes a lot of communication. So these are typically not organizations that have 25, 30 people in their IT security group and are spending, millions of dollars every year to protect this information. They're really relying on firms like us to bridge that gap, right? So what's the business? How do I get the job done? Take care of patients, take care of clients, but also keep things secure and moving. I got laughed at last year, just our kickoff. I said, everything we do is going to be focused around end user productivity, keeping them working, and security, right? And they get kind of laughed at by our group because they're opposing forces. So
hopefully they're getting aligned slowly, right? I'm a big believer that, if you can make the secure way also the simplest way, that's when you see like massive adoption, right?
Yep.
But we're not there yet on most stuff. So I was excited to have you, you know, talk about this one specific incident that we were discussing a little bit before we hit record. Tell me a little bit about what happened, what the client was like, and you know, how this sort of played out.
Sure. The one we talked about, or at least briefly touched on, it's an organization that operates in probably 15 different states. They manage multiple entities. They have users on site at these different properties. There's a lot of moving parts. There's construction, there's service management, there's build out. And again, it's kind of a distributed work environment. So it's not just, hey, you know, I can go see Joe down the hall and ask him a question, because Joe might be in two time zones or whatever it may be. So
sounds like every business now in, you know, sort of post-COVID.
A lot of businesses ended up that way starting in 2020, but this particular group had been sort of structured around that. So good group, longtime client, smart folks in, you know, in the back office, accounting, finance functions. They oversee, they outsource the IT, most of the IT work to us. So we're responsible for help desk, we're responsible for IT security, cloud solutions, things like that. They have a good footprint. We go through a process to review, you know, they're using the Microsoft products, so 365 and Azure and some of the security elements of those, as well as some other third parties to help mitigate their risk. So they've taken their security very seriously. They have some big business partners that may be doing construction, build out services, HVAC systems for some of their properties. So they have big vendors that they've worked with long term. They're tied in very tightly with. They know the people on their end. The vendor knows people on our client side. And the vendor takes their systems very seriously. They're a big organization. They have security elements you'd be looking for, right? You know, they have antivirus. They have these things. They've checked those boxes. In this particular instance, they have a third-party consultant that works in between, that manages projects, that manages scheduling. They're an independent one-person shop, so they sort of oversee things going on between the two groups. They have a certain level of expertise, right, in managing their particular piece of it. So there's three entities involved. Two of them, bigger organizations, pretty good monthly spend on IT security. They understand the importance of it, pay attention to it. In this particular instance, the third-party independent consultant had a Gmail account that was compromised. So now you're adding in non-corporate sort of Gmail home-type email systems, and this account had become compromised. The bad actor was able to figure out that this third party was in between, got access to the system. So they could essentially read messages going back and forth. As they did this, they essentially created a spear phishing campaign. They were able to see what was happening between the two organizations without anybody knowing they were seeing this. So it was happening outside both organizations with this third party.
Spear phishing is the fraudulent practice of sending emails ostensibly from a known or trusted sender in order to induce targeted individuals to reveal confidential information. Usually used in targeted attack campaigns to gain access to an individual's account or impersonate a specific person, such as ranking officials or those involved in confidential operations within the company.
They got enough information that they ultimately sent a very well-crafted and legitimate looking email, to the controller of our client. So Joe at our client reads this email and says, okay, yeah, this is from Sally or whoever sent it. I know them, to update the banking information. So ask them to update banking information for their payments going forward, the new account they had with Citibank, whoever it was.
So Gmail account or similar, right, yep, gets compromised, and that's what they're using, and that's their normal account. So it's like legit email, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. And so then the bad actor watching is looking at this traffic flow. And then they know who the actors are, they know who the players are. So they send us basically a very targeted email to the CFO of our client saying, hey, can you, and it looks like it's coming from the vendor's payable purchasing functions. And, hey, can you update this banking information? We're switching as of June. The person makes the adjustment, doesn't think anything of it. They make payments for the better part of 3 months. They get a call from the vendor and said, hey, we've always been on good standing with you, and this is kind of a hard phone call to make, but you owe us $2 million. We haven't had a payment in well over 60 days. What's going on? You know, is there an issue with the service we're delivering? You know, what's happening here? And our client immediately panics and, you know, says, what do you mean? I, here's a $600,000 payment. Here's another one for $150,000. Like, we paid all our invoices to you. And then they so now you start digging, right? And people start panicking. What do you mean you paid us? We pay on time all the time. So they dig through and they go back and ultimately find the request to change the routing. And then where did that come from? Because we haven't changed any payments and we certainly haven't received any. And that's not our bank account. And so now everybody's looking, what happened here? How did this happen? Our client immediately calls us in a panic. Like, did we have a breach? What's going on? And we need somebody to go through our systems and find out exactly how they knew the contacts and their vendor. And now they contact the insurance companies and they want an audit of everything that happened and forensics. And it becomes very distracting, right? It becomes very contentious between the clients and their vendor and these other things that go on. And, you know, it's a very emotional, even though it's, you know, these corporate funds and you think things like this, but somebody could lose their job. Becomes a very personal experience.
It's $1 million, right? Let's not, right? Like, this, a lot of this money isn't like, this is the biggest that I've, well, no, that's not true. I heard about somebody getting in the middle of a merger and acquisition, which was close to 20 million, right?
It was, yeah.
So, well, but similar kind of fact pattern. Oh, wow. Okay. So what happens?
So in that case, the money was gone because it took such a long time. It wasn't a one-time event, right? So they were able to take the money over time. The cyber insurance companies got involved. From our level, we turned over everything. They had hired somebody to come in and do the assessments. Took a long look at it. There was no fault really, no fault from our side from a technical standpoint. No fault on the vendor side from a technical standpoint. They could show where the breach had happened. They could see the message traffic flow. So there was an issue there, but it's an independent consultant, so there's only so much you can do. So it cost the insurance company some money for sure, but
did insurance cover it?
They did, yeah. I don't know exactly if they, how they split it or what that ended up being. Once we were kind of out of that piece of it, it wasn't necessarily us, but the vendor did get their money and it didn't have to come out twice, I guess, from our client. So I don't know the specifics on how that worked.
I mean, it's an interesting one because how it gets read, and that's one of the most challenging from an insurance perspective, because you tricked the employee for your company, right? But it wasn't a technical issue, but it looks very legitimate. It's from the right address. You are starting to see, I mean, for listeners, what you're starting to see is that this is what's known as cyber crime, which is actually like the theft of funds and invoice fraud, and it's challenging. What you often are seeing now is a requirement of whether you have more than any payments larger than $25,000, you have some sort of secondary authentication process in place. And certainly in your changing, that CFO, if a CFO had been really dealing with a lot of cyber attacks and a lot of training, would probably, that would have raised all kinds of red flags and said like, whoa, 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 why are you doing this? And with good controls in place, would have picked up the phone and called and confirmed.
This is a good best practice to note. Pick up your phone and call to double check whenever bank accounts, routing numbers, or changes in payments come into play. This is all a part of basic end user education. You can have all the antivirus software security in the world, but many cyber attacks come down to human error. Education is the key.
That's a big component with one of the outcomes and things that we're talking and going back to our clients is, we're saying, look, we've got advanced antivirus solutions and it's backed by security operations centers. So humans are watching through these threats. We are doing patching. We're on top of this and we have backup and disaster recovery things. All those core components, but the education piece, the awareness and making sure that everybody in the organization knows that they're accountable for cybersecurity. They're either part of the problem or part of the solution. They have to be able to understand that, know it, and be trained on it. So I think that you may have had know before on in some of these other solutions, right? They're, it's the end user education, because it can't just be technical solutions to protect the organization that you've spent your whole life building, right? And the job that you want to keep. It has to be education on users. There has to be other steps and policies and procedures in place, right? Checks and balances. I need to slow down and make a phone call before I make this change. Does this feel right? How do I read this? And even if it looks authentic, are there things that can jump out? So those are big topics. There was backup disaster recovery if you got breached and something happened, you're ransomware. There's antivirus and the tools to kind of protect that. But sort of that third leg of security really falls on the end users and falls on management to make sure that that's a priority, that they understand those components of it.
Yeah, I had a great episode with one of the folks from Nobe before, and you know, everyone rolls out education like sort of like apple pie and vanilla ice cream, and like it's something that we need to do. And I think we, at different points, we can overstate the impact of education because it's sort of like blame the user. It's not the solution to stop all spam and like don't click on those links. But I think what you're seeing is like a mix of humans plus technology. There's enough controls that, you know, it's often like multiple steps that a human has to do to really make one of these bad outcomes take place. And, you know, having people educated enough, and I thought the guest provided a great, you know, it's like, is it unusual and impactful, right? And there's urgency. And if those three things are like all together, you go, all three of those things don't come together all of the time. This is not like you're going to change your everyday thing that you do, but it's just like, wow, this feels weird. And I don't know, I guess I've never been a CFO and I've never been a treasury clerk. Maybe banks, people are changing their bank details like every day. We've never changed. It's not something that like vendors do every day.
Yeah, it wasn't successful, but the spear phishing, it's really targeted and there's research behind it. The ones that come in all day, every day, most of them get picked up by your junk filter and, you know, these other things. But yeah, it's kind of the unique ones to get through. We had a CFO of a pretty well-known restaurant chain. He got a message and they were in acquisition mode and same sort of thing. He got a very, very specific, very targeted message from the CEO, except that there was one letter wrong. That just said, hey, I'm out of pocket, but set up this wire and make sure these funds are ready to go. I'm getting ready to close this deal. There's a high growth group and they're not seeing each other on a regular basis. And he could be out doing deals or closing on a location. So this gentleman knew enough to slow himself down and take a real close look at where it came from. And then he sent it to us and then we were able to trace route and figure out pretty quickly. It was garbage. But I mean, they had his name and credentials and those things. And if you look at everything we put online, and we do it too, because you know, we're growing our business, we're proud of the services we offer and what we do for a living. But all that creates information that can be used against you. I was speaking at a conference in the New Orleans, and the gentleman had been with the FBI, was retired, and was doing kind of advisory services, consulting services. At that time, I think for like the big casinos in Vegas, kind of advisory. But yeah, he told a story that struck with me because he's like, everybody thinks it's hard. It's really complicated to do this. He's like, but it's really not. He said, I could go online and I could do some research in a few hours and I could figure out based on Facebook and other postings, I can find the CEO of a mid-sized company, right? I drive by this building every day. Who's the CEO of that company? I can go on their website, figure out who the CEO is. Now I can look at, you know, his Facebook profile, his public profiles, and now I can see, oh, he's got kids this age and his kids go to this school district. He said, I can type up an email from a legitimate account that says, hey, this is your school district. There's a sexual predator that's been in the area. We're just sending out this quick message to let you know the kids are secure. We're staying in lockdown, but you know, we wanted to notify you. Click here for more information. He said, the emotion of seeing your kid's school and sexual predator in the area, it's an instant trigger. Most people will just click on that. He said, now it's a technical, right? Now, can I download something, you know, that's not caught? And now I can sort of monitor what you're doing and watch you going forward. But the psychology of it is pretty interesting how, you know, some of these things come about. So
it is just sort of like mind-boggling. We've seen even our company's been new employee starts and they start texting that new employee from me as the CEO. That's pretty impressive. And it's often for like little gift cards. I mean, it's like hundreds of dollars that they're asking for. I mean, that's nothing. I'm like, you must be doing this so efficiently. Like you obviously are monitoring like LinkedIn, that person. But then you got their phone number, which that's kind of impressive. You know, how did you do that? Connect this person to, unfortunately, like all the creepy stuff that happens on the internet that let us advertise to them, they can also use to, they're just advertising, right? It's a different product. It's an attack. Well, Bruce, this has been awesome. Any other thoughts or, you know, things that you want to share with the audience? Based on this experience, how has it changed what you're doing with your clients?
We're doing a lot more education and opportunities like this where we can just sort of spread the word. We share information, right? And the more of that we can put out and things that we've seen and how people have been exploited and taken advantage of. Those are important things. Obviously, the end user training component of it, the awareness piece of it. I started my career in public accounting a long time ago. So it was the Arthur Andersen, Enron, Adelphia Business Solutions era when they were collapsing and these things were going on. And the presidents and CEOs of these groups said, well, financials aren't my responsibility. That was a CFO's responsibility. I'm not a CPA. I don't have a financial background. That wasn't my responsibility. So after those occurred, after those collapses and thousands of people out of work and jobs lost and communities destroyed, CEOs are now accountable. They have to understand the financials. They can't just say, well, that wasn't my responsibility. I didn't understand that. So, I can't be held accountable. And I see the similar type of shift. I think the days of I'm not a computer person, I'm not an IT person, I don't understand this stuff, somebody else just has to do it, have to go away. You don't have to know the ones and zeros of it and the nuts and bolts, but you have to be able to ask the right questions. Okay, I'm signing this paper. This happened to us recently. It was a new prospective client. I'm signing this piece of paper that says for cyber insurance reasons, I have all these things in place. Before, our clients used to just sign off on their own. Now, our clients will send it to us to make sure we can confirm that. But are they asking the right questions? Like, show me. It says I have multi-factor authentication in place. I don't ever remember that being implemented in our systems. When do I ever try to log in twice? When do I need a second login, right? So I think just asking those, paying attention to it, questioning and challenging, having somebody look over it and say, are these things in place? Does this make sense? And being kind of at that executive level, it doesn't have to be the deep technical knowledge, but at a management leadership level, you need to understand the impact of that.
Long gone are the days when executives could claim that they didn't understand and therefore aren't responsible, and for good reason. Continue to reflect on this as Andy speaks of his own experience as an executive.
I'm both an executive myself, but also talking with them all day, every day, is because often when we're talking with clients, it's C-suite folks who are part of that conversation. It's really what we often are just hammering on them, that this has to be a team effort. You may not know the deep technical pieces of it, but you have to have a team here. You have to have folks. You have to have your technical folks. You have to have your compliance and your legal folks, and you've got to have your insurance folks. And they all should be kind of talking, and they should be talking at a level that not that the executive who is not a deep expert in each one of those can understand and say, okay, are you working together and what's going on here, right? And there's accountability from that executive. And when you do that, then you start to, and again, it's the devil's in the details, but there it is as simple as like, have we talked about this? Have we put the right people communicating with each other? Have we practiced this and talked about it, right?
In most cases, when you're building something, you have some design, even if it's a home project, right? You probably sketch something out on a piece of paper. What's it going to look like? Dimensions. I mean, you've planned things around it. And IT seems to be just one of those where you just start putting things in place without having a bigger plan or some assessment of why we're doing things. We're big on the risk assessments, whether it's for, as part of the HIPAA compliance renewal process and review process, or just anybody doing it, because you don't really know what you're trying to fix or where your true risks are unless you go through and do a true evaluation of it. So maybe you're spending a lot of money to mitigate a risk that isn't a huge risk, but it's not thought of like that. I think those risk assessments are a really good place to start. Where our gaps are, how much money do we have to spend? Where should we be spending that money to mitigate the highest risk associated with us, whether it's loss of reputation, client data, business funds, cash out the door that goes overseas? So that's the other part, that just knowing your starting point, having reasoning behind that, to then start to put in a plan to make sure that you've got it accounted for. So
And there's documents like the risk assessments we often are talking about, business impact assessments, right? Which is, again, a different version of that where you start thinking about the interdependencies of different and what's the highest priority. I often talk with these businesses and they're like, well, they want to create something that's so complex and, you know, massive. It's like, no. Just do the like 1 hour version of this, because complexity is the enemy of consistency. Can you just do this and just check it, right? And it's so simple and you've done it across your whole. For MSPs, the ones that have actually done it across all of their, I'm so saddened because I talk with so many MSPs that they actually do it with all their clients and do it consistently. But as a business owner, if you don't take a Friday afternoon, take a Tuesday morning, spend an hour and just see where you get and gosh, then print it out. don't save it. You know, just print it out.
Remember, complexity is the enemy of consistency. You're better off being consistent with your cybersecurity rather than coming up with a super complex plan to protect yourself and your company. That, and enlisting the help of a professional like Bruce.
Business owners, they're operating every day, and as IT partners, we're part of that management solution. We're part of the team, but I mean, they certainly have more insight into, you know, what's the risk of loss. What's the one thing, if this happens, you know, you probably are closed for good. And if this happens, you're probably closed for 6 months and then closed for good. And then this happens. You start to evaluate and, you know, look at some of their spends. They're spending money in areas that have very low impact, but they don't really have a handle on their SaaS applications and security or backup and redundancy around, you know, their most critical EMR system. And, you know, so just that kind of risk assessment, knowing if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. Type of idea that if I don't know where I'm going, I'll just start wandering. I'll get somewhere, I guess. But is it really where you needed to get to? So I think it's non-technical type of meetings and conversations that have to happen to be able to map to the technical solution of it, not the other way around. So,
yeah. Well, Bruce, this is great. I really appreciate the time. Keep doing what you're doing. Keep helping organizations. And gosh, I hope people hear this and. Yeah, it's a scary day when you get that call and say, we paid $1 million to somebody, the wrong people.
Yeah. yeah, when they got that call, I mean, I got the message. I mean, it got escalated right away and everybody just has that sort of like, oh, shoot factor.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. That wouldn't be the word I would use, but yeah. PC version.
Yeah.
PC
that's, version. But, like what happened? How did this happen? And, you know, how do we make sure this never happens again? So it is not a good feeling. So.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Thank you so much. And people can find you on your website. We'll post some of that stuff.
Great.
Anywhere else they should be following what you're doing?
We have Twitter account, LinkedIn account. Those are all on the, you know, the main website. So if you go to the www.vertilocity.com, you can see, you know, our blogs and some other links and you'll, you know, learn more about us. But yeah, thank you. I appreciate the time and the opportunity to speak on this topic. It's, you know, it is important. So thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Cyber Crime Lab, brought to you by DataStream Insurance. When the worst happens, you're going to want the best financial, legal, and technical support to get you back up and running again. With cyber insurance from DataStream, we find the most comprehensive insurance coverage on the market alongside critical post-incident customer support. Go to datastreaminsurance.com today and see how we can help you secure your business data. That's datastreaminsurance.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and give us a 5-star review. You'll find show notes and any resources mentioned at cybercrimelabpodcast.com. We hope you'll join us next episode. Until then, stay safe, and more importantly, stay ready.